Okay, here we are. Here we are. What's up? How's everybody doing out there? You know, just another week here in the weirdest time in the last 100 years. Yeah, everyone keeping it together relatively? Hope so. Let's get right to it. This is People Pleaser. If you're new to the show, welcome. How'd you find us here in the apocalypse? That's amazing. Stick around. Listen for a bit, why don't you? What else are you doing? You got nothing else to do. When we start the show here, what we do is I read reviews from Apple Podcasts. You can go and do this. You can leave a review on Apple Podcasts. You leave a 5-star rating and a review, and I'll read that review on the show and review you back. You have to let me know who you are and if you want me to like plug anything or say anything specific. Otherwise, I don't really know how to review you back. But it works like this. The one I'm reading today, it's called Power to the People Pleaser. 5 stars, of course, you gotta. This is from Dakota Hawks. It says, "This podcast is the bee's knees. In these dark apocalyptic times, it is awesome to have someone like Austin to tune into. Pumping out the convos to help keep the quarantine boredom at bay. Thanks for the content, and please, please keep it up." That was a good one to see right now, because like I've said on the show the last couple weeks, it's been hard to know whether or not I should continue doing these right now, to know whether or not anyone cares or is still listening, but it looks like people are still listening, and thanks, Dakota, for writing that. Dakota is an old friend. I think we went to middle school and high school together, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe just high school, but I think middle school and high school, and we sort of reconnected like 2 or 3 years ago. He and his wife used to come in all the time to this restaurant I worked at in Utah, and so I got to see them all the time. So Dakota's a really, really talented graphic designer, and I saw this on Instagram. I saw all these cool graphic designs he did. You can find his work at DakotaHawksDesign.com or just by looking up Dakota Hawks on Instagram, spelled how it sounds, DakotaHawks. Dakota Hawks Design. He does this really cool graphic design, and he just shocked the hell out of me one day. I didn't even know that he was a member of the Fort Nation or the Blanket Nation. I didn't even know that he was listening to the show, and he just hit me up with this amazing design that he did. I didn't have to ask him to do it. He just, you know how rare that is to get really great graphic design work done for free? That's amazing. It was my first ever fan art, and it came from Dakota, and it's something that's really dope. I put it on my story, but I don't think I ever actually uploaded it to the Instagram page, so I'm going to put it on the Instagram page. I'll probably change the profile photo of the Instagram page to that logo, at least for a little while, to honor Dakota and this review. Thanks for sending that in, Dakota. Dakota's the bomb. Really, really talented graphic designer. Cool guy. Really cool of him to write this review and to do that design. That really blew me away, so thank you so much for doing that, Dakota, and for letting me know that there are people out there who still are getting something out of these episodes. Yeah, you know, I'm sorry there have been so many about music lately. Normally I have lots in the can so that I can kind of orchestrate or parse out episodes so that they're a little bit more diverse, but this is the last episode that I have right now, so I haven't recorded a new episode in several weeks, so I'm gonna have to come up with a game plan, either recording remote or doing live episodes or another mini-sode or something like that. Yeah, this was the last thing I recorded before the quarantine, and it's a good one. It's a really good one. This is a good guy that you're going to listen to, and that's all I'll say about it for now, because I still got the intro and all that jazz, and I'll just shut up, and here we go. So yeah, like I said, between the episode on starting a band and the episode on outsider art, there's been quite a lot of chit-chat around music lately in this blanket fort. And this episode is gonna be another music-centered discussion, but here's the thing, music is just such a massive part of my life. It's been a huge thing for me in so many moments where I needed a way to take an emotion or experience that I was having out from inside me and put it into a physical form where it could be looked at or examined with something resembling a curious objectivity. Writing songs has been and continues to be my most personal and revealing form of expression. The form I pour the most of myself into and the form I work most tirelessly at. It also causes me the most distress. It has the ability to morph at a moment's notice from the thing I'm most confident in to the thing I'm the most agonizingly ashamed and embarrassed of. I met Sam Burton during those first few years in my early 20s when songwriting was changing from a downtime hobby to one of my deepest and most enduring loves. We were living in this dirty punk house at the time that doubled as a venue, hosting near constant live shows for traveling and local bands. The house was caked in dried beer stains and cigarette ash, and musical equipment outnumbered the furniture at a near 3-to-1 ratio. Almost every person living in the house was a musician or artist in some form or other, including Sam. When the house wasn't packed with our friends for a party or a show, we'd have nightly quiet get-togethers in Tucker's upstairs bedroom, drinking Old Crow whiskey straight from the bottle and passing a guitar around the room to exchange our latest songwriting efforts. It was a hell of an environment to form an artistic identity and a safe place for us to help and support each other, all while partying like the world was coming to an end. A lot of years and a lot of growth later, Sam and I are both still writing songs. Him a good deal more successfully than me, but I don't think that would surprise anybody who knew us then, and I'm sure it doesn't surprise anybody who knows us now. He was always better than me, always had a deeper well, a more finely tuned relationship with his instrument, and a greater sense of ease and respect for the form. Where I wrestled and fought with a song, he seemed to dance with it, always being sure to let it take the lead. He'd hate that I'm saying this. He'd tell me to be more confident and that he and I just have different styles, but it's the truth, and I'm at peace with that. I continue to wrestle, striving to find moments when I get caught up in a song's undeniable rhythm, moments where the song leads me and tells me where it would like to go next. And Sam continues to unfurl tunes that make anyone who hears them wonder how it is he's not a bigger deal yet or a better-known name. For my part, I'm happy to call him a friend and to do whatever I can in my very small way to boost his signal. I hope you'll stick around to the end of our discussion so you can hear him play his new single live. It's an effortlessly beautiful performance of a song that has that instantly recognizable quality of an American folk classic. So let's get to it. From a Blanket Fort recording studio in my one-bedroom apartment in North Hollywood, this is People Pleaser. I'm Austin Archer, and today I'm talking to my very talented friend, Sam Burton, about songwriting. And you'd think that being a person who wants to make everyone happy and wants to appeal to everyone would be a good thing, but yeah. It's actually disingenuous.
Totally. I mean, yeah, I remember the first time I talked about that kind of stuff, I had my mind blown. It's like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know? It's like, oh, that's bad?
Yeah, like, what's wrong with wanting people to like me?
Yeah, totally.
I'm trying to be a likable guy.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm so codependent.
Yeah, it's so hard not to be codependent.
Yeah.
It's like almost impossible. I think that some level of codependency in a relationship is like near inescapable. Mm-hmm. Just because you're so... You don't hang out with anyone more than that person.
Right.
You don't spend, and even if like you really make an effort to have your own independent lives and you do your own independent things and like go on trips without each other and like spend whole days where you're not seeing each other and you're just doing your own thing, still like there's no one who you're going to spend more time with or
right.
be or share more with than that person for
right.
however long you're in that relationship. So it's very hard not to
have your emotional state rely on how they're feeling towards you on a particular day.
Yeah, totally.
And yeah. Yeah. As much as I always say that I want that. All right. Let's talk about the thing we're talking about.
Are we already going?
Yeah, it's going.
Okay.
See that? It's nice and slick.
Yeah.
You just slide right into it without you even knowing.
Yeah.
And then you're on nice and cozy. Gotta drink my tea. I woke up with a little throat thing, so I apologize if you get the throat thing. I'm trying to keep the throat thing on my side of shit. How'd you start songwriting? Like, what age were you when you first started writing songs?
15.
15?
Yeah.
What made you want to do that? I mean, I know for me it was just like I like wanted to be cool, but I don't like what made. Was there a specific thing that, or had you been taking guitar lessons before you wrote your first song, or did you just, or was there a, was it something you always knew you wanted to do, or did you just?
I didn't always know. But I did have, like, when I was little, if I saw a guitar, I was, like, very, like, moved by it, mm-hmm. kind of. But I didn't know why. And it was, like, time had gone by where I had totally forgotten that that was something that I that had a major effect on me. Partially, I think, because the idea of learning the instrument seemed so, like, huge, and I couldn't conquer that, you know? But then I was snooping in my parents' closet,
mm-hmm.
while they were at work one day after school, and I found my stepdad's guitar in there, and I didn't know that he had a guitar.
Oh.
And I was just like, whoa, you know? And then I asked him if I could play it, and he was like, no, you can't play it. And I was like, okay. And
rude.
I know. Also, he like never played it. Like, I didn't even know it existed, you know?
That's like these guitars on the wall. Like, they're just like, don't look at them. Don't touch them. Don't look at them. They're just meant to be.
Yeah.
Don't ask questions about them.
Exactly. So I started like sneaking it out while he was at work. And because I had never really had a discipline for like anything before, when I finally showed him that I had figured out a couple chords, he was like moved enough to not be mad and to just get me a guitar. And the first time I wrote a song, it was just like, I didn't even know that I wanted to do it. I just kind of did it. And it was like finding something in a dirt field, like a ruby or something. It was just so like bewildering. It was so insane to do. And I was just like, oh my God, I did this thing. And I couldn't believe it. And I was lucky enough that when I went to my parents to show them that they were accepting of it,
mm-hmm.
Because it was such a fragile moment. I think it could have, like if they were to shit on it or something, it would have really fucked it up. But
yeah.
they were nice about it, so.
Well, that's good.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, that's really lucky.
Yeah.
I think that's probably, that's a more genuine answer. And I mean, like, I even think that I say the reason I wanted to start was because I thought it was cool. I think even that's like a people-pleasing thing where I'm like, I'm trying to come off as like self-aware where I'm like, I was just trying to be cool. It's not. I mean, I was always interested in different forms of creative expression. And mm-hmm. like, I always like I wanted to be a good painter, and I wanted to be a good writer and a good poet, and I wanted to be a good dancer, and I wanted to be a good, you know, and like, so like learning to play the guitar and like become like starting to write songs and stuff. And like piano was what I first started with. I started like learning how to play Coldplay songs and stuff on the piano.
Right.
At home. You know, those like annoying kids where every time there was a piano at a party, they like sit down and start playing clocks.
Oh yeah. I was like that.
Yeah.
With the guitar.
I was like that, at parties. But I think that the genuine thing is like, there was like a core of like, I wanted to speak the way that people that I admired were able to speak through the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I got the same response, loving response that you got from my first songs. Maybe I did, or maybe it was in my head, but I think that like, at the time I was like Chris, I was friends with Chris in high school, and he was like the best songwriter of like any of our friends. And he was, and people were always like, whoa, Chris is so good.
Yeah.
And when I would write songs, people would be like, oh, cool. And I was always like, damn it. Like, were there people, were there like things that you'd heard in songs that you were like, I want to do that. I want to talk like that. Like, I want to like say, capture a moment or a feeling or like a succinct mood the way that Neil Young does in this part of this song? Or,
well, that early, like, I wasn't listening to good stuff yet, or, like Neil.
Yeah.
I was, I mean, I had like a...
I don't think any of us were.
No. Yeah. I mean, I had like the profound experience of it being like this kind of mysterious thing that presented itself and then just being called to it. But then after that, I definitely had the like, well, I want to do this to be cool, you know?
Yeah.
And to get girls and whatever, and to be special and stuff like that. But then looking back on it, it's interesting because you can see where the in your life, like where the road starts to taper off into a different direction where you kind of separate from the collective, like your personal collective, and you start to individuate a little bit more in a different direction. And that definitely was that for me, like in early adolescence, that's what made me want to taper off a different direction. And so, yeah, you know, you start listening to artists differently in a way where you're thinking about like, oh, maybe I could do that, or maybe I could go this way or whatever. And then I think it just led me to seeing like, I think of like a Bright Eyes concert or something when I was like 16. And then that being like a big moving experience again, you know? And then I don't know. Yeah, I wanted to go.
He's definitely one of those people that I think made it feel possible for me, at least. Because he was so young and relatable.
Right.
And he seemed to be speaking with such a profundity that it was like, oh, well, if he can have such a deep well of poetic knowledge about these complex themes, I can have a shot at it too.
Yeah, I mean, he was just like, I loved the... the anger in it, I related with that a lot at the time.
The emotion in his voice?
Yeah, like, in, you know, he, yeah, and the content sometimes. And and also he was just like a not a conventional guy. Like, he would act kind of feminine, and he was like really thin, and he wore like tight clothing and whatever. And I liked that because I grew up in this like super small town. When I started playing music, I would wear like girl, like tight girl pants and whatever. And then I had, and then I saw this act, and I didn't even know he existed until I went with my friend's older brother. And then it was like him being like so strong and kind of being like, fuck you to all of that. And then also just writing songs and whatever. I don't know. It was really inspiring.
The very first episode I ever did on this podcast, it was about taste, and it was about like, I was trying to talk to my friend about like, how do you get your personal taste and your style? And we talked about how in high school I used to borrow skinny jeans from Chris Bjorn when I'd go to concerts, because if we were going to a concert, I needed to look the part at a concert. I couldn't wear my like American Eagle clothes at the concert. I needed to like have a band shirt on and like have. But remember when skinny jeans were like that was really edgy, and it was also like really like kind of like a rebellious thing to do, and people would make fun of you.
Oh yeah.
Like mainstream jock kids would
all the time
would make fun of you and stuff, and then it became just the normal thing to do.
Right.
It became
and there was the time where like you really couldn't find skinny jeans at the store, you know, if you wanted to do that.
You had to buy girl jeans.
Yeah, you had to buy girl pants.
Or you had to go to Hot Topic and like specifically buy like gothic jeans.
Exactly.
Or
and so I never bought those because I was like, I'm not ready for that yet.
Like all the the accoutrement that goes with those, the straps and the I like the idea of looking at a guitar and being like, I don't think I'm ready for the enormity of the task of learning that. It's I still feel that with so many things. My friend today, we were going on a hike, and he was talking about how he's learning Japanese right now. And he was like talking to me about the Japanese alphabets and like how there's like three different alphabets, and one has like 32 characters, and one has like 20 something characters, and then one has like thousands of characters, and they're supposed to be like substitutes for Chinese characters, and like
oh wow.
And I just was like, how could you even approach, begin to approach such a gargantuan task? How does anyone, even from that country, learn the language?
Right.
You know, but I mean, it's just a, if it's functionally a different alphabet than ours, it, this characters that mean ideas rather than just letters and sounds.
Right.
But yeah, I like that idea of seeing a guitar and being like, because I still, with certain, I'll think all the time, like, you know, I could just like take a year off from songwriting and just do nothing but like work on scales and just like try to get really good at soloing.
Yeah.
You know, and just like really like nail down my finger work and stuff, but I'm not going to do it.
Right.
Like, I'm
just right. The languages was the other example I was thinking of something like presenting itself as being so enormous, you know?
Uh-huh.
But yeah, I think you know when you're supposed to go down that road or something, like if it's presented to you, I don't know. There's like a, there's something that you feel, I feel like, that just tells you like, all right, you're going to do this at some point, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. The reason why I can't stop doing this stuff is because it is true that it was always there.
Mm-hmm.
And it's always been the thing that's been true. Always, I was never a kid who wanted to be an astronaut or a fireman or a... I have pictures of me at 4 years old, like asleep in a pile of paint, because like I was really genuinely obsessed with like Monet and Degas and Van Gogh, and I wanted to be an artist.
Right.
And I didn't necessarily want to be a songwriter, but I wanted to express myself in a way like that. I wanted to like capture a feeling or, you know, an idea in that way. And yeah, it's always been finding and experimenting with different things. I think, but you've been quite focused in this realm too. Did you in high school or at any time like play around with just straight poetry or any other forms? Like did you ever draw or did you ever?
I drew with my uncle. Like kind of would spend some time with me and show me how to draw a little bit, and I would do it when I was little, but then I didn't do it anymore. But I loved doing it.
Was he a drawer?
No, he was like a woodworker. I tried that a little bit too when I was little, because that's what all my family does.
Oh, really?
Yeah, my grandpa owns a shop, and then all my uncles work at it.
Oh,
my mom
cool.
didn't work there, but, well, she did for a little while. But yeah, they all worked at this wood shop, but...
That's cool, I didn't know that.
Yeah. I read poetry, I wrote some. I don't know. I never considered myself a poet or anything. So I guess no. I didn't really.
So was your first experience writing anything akin to poetry, lyrics for songs? Was that when you wrote that first song that, with your stepdad's guitar? Was that your kind of your first time of attempting to express something in a semi-poetic, you know, like lyrical way?
I would say that I was writing strictly something that I thought would be like a song. So I wasn't looking at something and trying to describe the essence of it with poetry or something. I was like in a very surface level way trying to construct a song, you know? So like, this is what a love song sounds like. And it was totally like shallow, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I still do that sometimes, but yeah, so it wasn't like it wasn't a poetic attempt at it or anything. Lyrically, I think I didn't start to try to approach it that way until I, like, you know, my first experience with that was like Bright Eyes, hearing that kind of being done, and then it made me want to try to do it. I would like to present a disclaimer that I don't relate to Bright Eyes anymore. I don't like them.
I know that you and I have had this conversation. You're not into Connor's latest stuff.
No, I'm not. But I
did you listen to Better Oblivion with Phoebe Bridgers?
I listened to a few tracks just to kind of see what was going on. Not really. I mean, it's not like it sounded bad to me. It was just like, it just was like...
You just want him to grow up.
Yeah, I was like, are you like, is this regression or something? Like, I think it was a smart move and all, but...
Yeah, he's jumping on like a really popular artist right now and like collabing with a, you know.
Absolutely.
And they, I mean, I think it's a cool marriage of sounds. It's two voices that I would not have thought of putting together. I think I think her collaboration with Lucy and Julian makes a lot more sense. But yeah, I still think it's interesting.
For sure.
That's so funny to me that you're like, no, I don't fuck with Connor Oberst.
Well, I'm not saying I dislike him. I'm just like, I've mentioned it twice now, and I want everyone to know that's listening to this. It's not like I'm listening to Bright Eyes all the time still.
I still listen to Bright Eyes. I listened to Connor Oberst's album from a few years ago, and I loved it. But yeah, I think you and I talked about that. We talked about how you were like, no, I feel like he's going backwards.
A little bit, but I mean, I know that I'm going to do that too.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not an easy thing.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, first of all, before I move on to this, I was going to say it's interesting in this form, you know, just kind of the progression of it, that you have to sort of like define for yourself whether or not you think you're moving forward. And I don't even know if I conceptualize it as forward movement anymore. Mm-hmm. I just conceptualize it as like next thing, mm-hmm. next thing, yeah. next thing. And I don't necessarily think like, this is going to be my best work.
Right.
It's just kind of like, this is my newest work and it's different
right.
from the other things. And I always try to find new things to say or new ways to express it.
Right.
But definitely there was a phase, I think, after high school. I wonder if you experienced this too, where it definitely did feel like forward momentum, where it felt like, okay, I'm actually starting to figure out who I am mm-hmm. as a songwriter
yeah.
and like what works best for me.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of friends who still think that I haven't found that. I have a lot of friends that are like, why are you always using different voices and like using different styles? Like, figure out what your style is. And I'm like, I don't know. I think my style is to use different voices.
Yeah.
And, but did you have a process like that? I mean, you see Bright Eyes and you start realizing, okay, I can maybe do it no more. But not just emulating other people, but did you have a phase where you felt like, or maybe you still feel like you're doing this, where you felt like you were heading in forward momentum, where it's like, oh, this is getting better and better and more solid and more true?
I don't know. Like, there's just moments where there's synchronicity,
mm-hmm.
I think, and everything just kind of is like opening ahead of you, and you know that it's right, and you're just like, wow, I'm just going to keep following it. And then that chapter closes, and then you try it again, and you just get shut out and blocked and said no to.
Mm-hmm.
And so it feels like you're not growing anymore in those moments, but you are, you know? What I'm trying to say is like the process of growth, I don't want to say growth either. I want to say like because I think it's like circular, especially in the outside world where like you're accepted for a while and then you're shut out for a while. But you're always, something underneath is always kind of happening.
Mm-hmm.
And whether that's being accepted or not is kind of irrelevant,
yeah.
especially to your job as an artist or whatever you're doing. Like, you have to just do it anyway, whether people are looking or not. Sometimes there's synchronicity and then sometimes there's not.
That synchronicity is crazy. I think that that's something that it sounds like you experienced it right off the bat, where this thing sort of like called out to you and then you like had this thing sort of spill out and it was like, wow, like finding that precious ruby.
Yeah.
But I find that like that was something that was initially for me truly rare and truly like special every time it came along.
Mm-hmm.
And it still is. There's still times where I'm like, oh, this is a special one. Mm-hmm. This is something flowing through right now that's really special. And I've heard so many songwriters describe it this way, this exact same way, where it's like, it doesn't really feel like I'm doing it in those moments. It feels mm-hmm. like it's just kind of happening.
Yeah.
It feels like I was playing around with something, like an idea, just kind of goofing around, and then this thing started spooling out.
Yeah.
And those tend to be my favorite pieces. Sometimes, have you ever dreamt a song?
Oh, yeah, but I've never succeeded at getting it down after that.
Oh, yeah? I've had a few where in the dream it felt like this is going to be a special one, and yeah. I woke up and I played it, and I went, oh, that was a kooky dream song.
Yeah, yeah.
That was, in the dream it sounded a lot cooler,
right.
And in real life it's just kind of not as cool.
Yeah.
But then I've had a couple where I've been like, wow, that really worked out.
Right.
Like, that really, and I think that's one of those things where I'm like, that's really cool that I even knew how to play it when I woke up. Like, right. I was like, I remembered the chords, I remembered the structure of the song, and I remembered in the dream feeling like, this is interesting. This is really cool. Yeah. And then waking up and playing it and going, wow. But I feel like that place, that synchronicity place, to me, and this isn't to say that I'm just such an enlightened artist at this point, but it's been so many years and it's been so many hundreds of songs and it's been so many Malcolm Gladwell thousands of hours, you mm-hmm. know, doing this, that those moments seem easier to obtain. Like, I was talking to, and I don't know if you experienced that too, but I was talking to a person about this the other day about, like, meditation. Like, we're trying to, me and my friend are trying to, like, embark on, like, a meditative practice, a daily meditative practice. And she was like, it just drives me nuts how hard it is for me to get quiet. And I was mm-hmm. like, I know, it's so hard for me to get quiet. And mm-hmm. I was like, but what I think, what I imagine is that if we keep doing this, and it's going to take like months and months and months, like eventually it's going to become easier to find that stillness mm-hmm. and that quiet and that connection. And that's sort of what I've experienced in songwriting, is like, I used to throw away 90% of what I wrote mm-hmm. because it just wasn't quite there and I was trying to force it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I would even record these songs and I would kind of sit on them for months and like tool around with different ways of looking at them. And eventually I'd just go, yeah, I just don't think this one ever really materialized. And these days they seem to, like, I write less, but when I do, it seems to be more expedient that I need to sit down now
yeah.
and write. Do you find that? Or
yeah, yeah, for sure. It's I think it's like a, mm-hmm. it become, like with meditation, for mm-hmm. example, it's like, the empty space starts to become a friend to you rather than mm-hmm. like intimidating to you.
Yeah.
And I really think it's your relationship to, you know, it's not the thing. It's not like, oh, meditation's hard. It's just your relationship to it. You don't have one yet, you know?
Yeah.
Like songwriting, it takes a long time to build a relationship to trusting what's coming up, mm-hmm. you know? And it's, as soon as you get out of practice with it, it can be really daunting to kind of go back and see, because you're afraid it's gone or you might not be good at it anymore, like, you know, whatever. But yeah, it's essential that you can relate with it like a friend, and then it will be there for you, you know?
Yeah, I feel like a question people often ask who don't do this is, they're like, well, what's the process? What do you do first?
Yeah.
Do you write lyrics first or do you write music first? You know, have you had people
oh, yeah.
ask you that?
Yeah.
And I don't know, I mean, maybe there is a specific way you do it, but I'm like, it never really, I don't personally have a specific A, B, C, D process.
Right.
Like, I used to. And I think that when I was going through my process of experimenting and finding, I guess, my voice mm-hmm. or my method or developing, as you said, that relationship with it, there was a time when we were living at that house in Salt Lake and playing house shows every weekend and like just playing music every day.
Yeah.
I was like pumping out like 3-4 new songs a day.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was always just smoking weed and just like writing songs every single day.
Yeah.
And most of them would go nowhere.
Right.
But it was sort of a process of like meditatively developing. And I think part of what I found in that time was I was usually trying to write specific kinds of songs. I would sit down with the intent of like writing a Modest Mouse song
yeah.
or like writing an Elliott Smith song or writing. And it was an interesting exercise, but it didn't always make for my most authentic or my truest expression. But I, for some reason, got it into my head that it was important that every time we play a house show, I have 5 new songs to show everyone.
That's the importance of a scene and a venue to share it. Like, it's so important, even if it's not with songs or it's just like anything that makes you motivated to do that. And mm-hmm. then when you can share it in a place where it's celebrated, is so necessary. It's mm-hmm. insane. And so, like, when there's no music scene or anything that you can be a part of or something, it can be really hard to keep yourself motivated to want to do it. The most people that I talk to that move here that are, like, into songwriting and stuff like that, they're so caught up on that they don't feel a part of the scene here, you know?
Yep.
And I'm like,
I feel like that.
For sure. Yeah. And it's really alienating and hard, but I always, not that I know any better or that I'm a part of it or
no, but you've done a really nice job of.
But I think the key is, like, you have to play your way into it.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Also with taste, there's one aspect of it where something's just coming through, and then there was the other part of it where you're like, you know, well, I want to write this kind of song and that kind of song. And I think that's important to do, actually, because when you speak about authenticity, there's an authenticity that exists within every single one of us,
mm-hmm.
but you can't communicate something authentic, right? Like, how could you? We're just using something that is resting upon stacks of influences.
Yeah.
Right? And so as soon as you actually speak it, it's not authentic anymore. It's going through some kind of form. And it's good to develop your taste, because then the form that you put it out in will be more sophisticated, you know? And there's something authentic in everything.
Yeah.
You know? And everything that you look at. And on the surface of everything you look at, there's something mundane, you know? Uh-huh. And I think you just have to acknowledge that in some ways you're going to have to steal or borrow or whatever, but hopefully you can feel that there's something urgent inside of it, you know? And when the urgency isn't there, you don't want anything to do with it, because mm-hmm. it's just hollow.
Yep. And you're just forcing it.
Right. Yeah. And if only the authenticity is there, if only the primal, like, energy is there, but you don't have, like, a sophisticated, like, beautiful structure, or maybe it doesn't need to be beautiful, but whatever, something to deliver it in, it's not contained. And so, yeah, it can be felt, but, like, it's not something you can pass around and feel and show. It's just, it's too open, you know?
Well, Nick and I talked about this a little bit when we were talking about outsider art, and like many avant-garde artists and songwriters and just painters, and like, have roots mm-hmm. in classical forms of their medium.
Yeah.
But they've chosen, after years of experimenting with different things, with trying different styles and learning different classical forms,
yeah.
they've found their own little groove and their own little synchronicity,
yeah.
And their own little relationship with their thing. And I think that some of my favorite avant-garde artists and experimental artists are people who do have those roots. And it's that same idea, I think, mm-hmm. of, like, taking the time to experiment and play around with different styles and different sounds and different feelings, and see what is kind of vibrating with you, and see what's kind of, like, speaking truthfully totally. Through you, and see what feels natural to do in front of a crowd and what doesn't.
Totally.
And see what, you know, and yeah, anything like that, just like anything that's worth it, it's going to take time. It's going to take time to develop that experience and that kind of easy access relationship with right. the thing.
I listened to this, I didn't listen, I read it. It was a Lou Reed interview, and he's talking about Metal Machine Music, which is kind of like his, like, noise record, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And this is just relating with the classical versus avant-garde thing, where he made a structure for the songs. And I don't know if he did it beforehand or afterward, but still, it helped him to replay these songs and to rethink about them and how to think about them. Is he gave them a structure, and even though it was just, you know, noise, it follows this structure, and so it has dynamic, and it has, and so you know where to put the energy, and you know when to take the energy away, and you know when to push it forward, and whatever. And that's, I feel like that's a very classical thing, is just to have a structure to whatever you're doing,
mm-hmm.
you know? Because sometimes you don't hear the structure, but usually if something's effective, it's there. That's not always true, but I don't know. I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. That there's some kind of classical, or not even classical, but there's just some kind of conventional framework at play there. Like you were saying, you're going to have to steal, you're going to have, and I mean, I got over this idea long ago that I'm not going to reinvent the wheel on this. I'm definitely I'm definitely not going to revolutionize the way people think about songwriting or the way people think about music, and that's not really my goal. And it's enough to just know that anything that I do that feels authentic and that feels in that rhythm of synchronicity will speak to someone and will be enough and will have my fingerprints enough on it that it's, and that's, I mean, God, I will never cease to be amazed at the just infinite ways we've found to do this. Like the infinite ways we've, there's a line in that movie of Star is Born where Sam Elliott's like talking about how like, it's all the same story, just told over and over again, same 12 chords. All any songwriter brings to it is just what he or she had, you know, their own experience, you know? And I'm like, yeah, that's it. Like, and it's amazing that I used to even think when we used to be, when we used to play those house shows in our early 20s, I thought it was amazing how differently we all articulated guitar playing even. That Brent had his own way, his like his a recognizable like strum and like a sound to his strum, and you had a recognizable almost like an accent of how you played guitar. And Tiffany had like a really specific rhythm and accent of how she played guitar. And you know what I mean? Like that's even interesting. And we're all using the same chords.
For sure.
Like we're all using the same building blocks, but somehow it's coming out even through our fingers.
That's why it's like, you know, it's not just about content. You know, it's not, it's like if you listen to any like pre-war blues or anything like that, like they're all playing the same songs, like literally, you know, they're passed down songs.
They're adding verses to Glory, Glory, Hallelujah. Like they're,
But the, but it's not just stylistic differences that you're hearing. It's depth of soul. You know what I mean?
It's that person.
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
That, yeah.
And something even to me that I believe is like beyond the person that's coming through them, you know, like, Lorca talks about it. He calls it the duende, you know? It's a power of soul that's coming through. And so the content is kind of irrelevant, right? Like, two people singing the same song can be so incredibly different that, like, especially when you take into account their personas, it could be ironic or it could be whatever. So
I love doing covers. I don't know how you feel.
I love them.
I love, even just at home, just like looking up a song that I like and playing it. I love it. I love finding my own way through someone else's material. And I always threaten that I'm going to be doing like a massive like covers album of like my friend's songs at some point, but I haven't done it yet.
I would love that.
I'm so glad that Tucker put together that compilation of Tiff's songs.
Oh, that was so cool to hear.
It was so much fun to work on. And it was also such a fun listen. It was so fun to listen through.
Were you there when they played it?
I was not. Tiff? Okay. No, I was not. But I got to talk to Tiff at the last show we did about it, because that was the first time I'd seen her since I think she got the gift. But yeah, Tucker, do one of those for all of us, okay? If you're going to do it for Tiffany, you have to do it for everybody.
Yeah, it had me thinking, like, I mean, what an honor it would be to have someone cover one of your songs.
Oh, what an honor.
And then you're like, are my songs coverable, you know?
Every time Tucker's done one of my songs, I've genuinely, even when it feels maybe like he's doing, it sounds ironic, or he's like playing with the song or playing with the form, I've always taken it as a total compliment.
Yeah, and it's really good too when whenever he covers your
songs. Really like hearing what he does, what his style does for the lyric.
Yeah.
It's so fat, and it speaks to exactly what you were just saying, where it's like, oh, it's a totally different song now.
Yeah.
But I love that it has a whole different weight to it. He'll even change certain lyrics because they seem more appropriate to his hoops style.
Yeah.
Like I have a lyric in a love song that he covered where I say, I can't write a love song that pars with Dylan or Folds. And and he changed it to Rodgers and Hart. And I was like, that's a much more like hoops, yeah. But it's the same thing. He's like, I'm just going to say two songwriters that feel more.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's great. And like, feel free to do that. Totally. You know?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not yours anymore once you put it out.
Absolutely. That's okay. That's someone I want to talk to you about. Do you experience, I was talking to my friend Beck Pete about this too, which she said is mourning. She said that she kind of mourns songs when she releases them, and it's like hard to like have it no longer be just hers.
Right.
I experience, and I still do to this day, not as much as I used to, but I experience several days of anxiety whenever I release something. And it's not just that I want it to do really well, or it's just knowing that like it's now out there and being judged, and and it feels very much like, I don't know, sending my child to like his first day of kindergarten or something, and being like, the kids are gonna make fun of him, or like they're gonna like not understand him, or they're not gonna like, and you just have to let go of that. Do you experience that?
Yeah, I think I get nervous about it. I haven't mourned it. Maybe I should be. I don't know.
Yeah, that was the first person I'd ever heard use that phraseology, and I don't think I've mourned, but I definitely get very, like, I have several days of kind of fear.
Yeah. Yeah. It's usually, like, leading up to it more that I am wrestling with some kind of anxiety, because you're like, you can't get rid of your own expectations.
Mm-hmm.
And then once it's out though, but like I'm already nervous about releasing the next thing I'm gonna release, you know. Yeah. So yeah.
Do you have a date for that? Is that like a few weeks?
It's in not until April.
Okay.
But yeah, it's like I'm already like, well, this time it seemed like there was a good response, but what if next time there's no response? And then you know you think about that too much and whatever, so yeah.
Do you go through and listen to the track to check, like let's check, and then kind of torture yourself a little bit with like
I've done that with the track that's coming out. I listened to it to make sure it was there.
Some days I listen to it and I go, some days I listen to a track that I have coming out and I go, no I'm this is great, this is great, and then some days I turn it on and I go, uh-oh. Oh, no.
Yeah.
I'm hearing it differently. And how did I not notice this before? Totally. How did I not notice that I'm the worst?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And I try to not... I take my own opinion on a day-to-day basis with a grain of salt, because my own sense of objectivity on my work is non-existent. And it's very, you know, I don't think anyone cares more about it than I do, of course, and also don't think anyone listens to it with the level of just like super grating and annoying criticism that I do.
Yeah, of course. I found that out in a very real way once when I was like focusing on something in a mix, and I was listening to some other songs that I liked to compare the mixes to see what was like normal or whatever. And then I realized that some of the recordings I love, like, there's so much going wrong in them. Like, something will be out of tune, wrong notes will be played, you know, like, the production is insane for some reason. And you never even noticed, you know?
You only notice it. Seriously. Yeah. Chris has done that in his mixing business. He said that, like, to practice, he'll rip songs from, like, people that he likes, and he'll, like, take it into his software and look at, like, what it's doing. And he's like, oh, weird. Like, they've set certain levels of things, like, way too high.
Yeah.
Like, this thing's, like, peaking like crazy.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, you don't really know. As long as it all coalesces and congeals.
Yeah.
If it's not your song and it's just some band that you like, you're not really listening for mistakes.
Totally.
I think that's interesting, too, because even when I show stuff to friends to, like, here, you listen to it. My friends, and I love them for this, but they're listening for mistakes. They're not just listening to the songs. Yeah. They're like listening to it for like, what can I send Austin back for some constructive criticism?
Right.
But they're not really just like, listening to the song.
Yeah, being passive with it.
Yeah.
Which you should be.
Which is like when I listen to a new song by a band that I really like, I just kind of put it on and I'm driving and I'm not sitting there going like, huh, mm-hmm. that's a weird choice for a place.
Right.
If sometimes things really stick out and sometimes I'm like, ooh, I really like that clarinet or I really like that, you know. But often like I'm not really listening to it with that hypercritical ear. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of letting it just wash over me. I was talking with a friend about I did this thing last year where I was listening to bands that I like. I was listening to like their full discography and like trying to like hear the progression.
Yeah.
And I listened to all of Vampire Weekend and I was like, yeah, I just feel like the albums just keep like getting stronger. And then my friend was like, I don't know, I miss like how lo-fi that first one was. And it just felt more honest. And I was like, huh. And I went back and listened to the first one again after like having listened to like the latest three. And I was like, he's right. But I didn't really notice it because it still sounds really solid. Still like it's not what I would consider self-made, you know, basement lo-fi.
Yeah.
But it's like definitely got a more humble presence than the later ones do. But I also don't fault them at all for being like, let's step it up.
Yeah.
Like let's.
Of course.
You know.
Of course. Yeah. There's you know, you judge things differently. I mean, and you could have a tendency to kind of gravitate toward one aesthetic over another, but you have to judge things in their field, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like, you may relate to a really warm kind of intimate aesthetic of like this lo-fi thing. And I personally gravitate to that like way, way more. But, but like, you know, if someone makes a commercial record, that's an art form in itself, you know? And yeah, it's like, it should be judged in that field.
Yeah.
And that's impressive to do.
Absolutely. Do you have a set process of what you do? You know, that question of like, is it lyrics first or is it both at the same time? Or do you have a set process or does it vary?
Yeah, I typically go about it the same way. I just play and sing gibberish.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try to find, I'm just like fishing basically. And then if I find something that I think works, then I'll put lyrics to it.
Yeah, Beck said, I heard him in an interview and he goes, sometimes I feel like I'm just kind of sticking my arm like into a void and just kind of like holding, like trying to see if something hits my hand and I'll grab it and pull it back through the void and look at it. And if it's like junk, I'll throw it back in.
Yeah, no, you know, totally.
It's just, it's that fishing, like just like, and I totally know that. I've definitely written that way where it's like, I have this one song I showed to a friend the other day and he's a friend who he's always like, you need to find a voice and stick with it. Like mm-hmm. you're too all over the place. And then he heard this song. He's like, yeah, that's it. Do mm-hmm. that. And I'm like, but I don't want to do that for every single song. But the way I told him the way that the song was written was like, I was goofing around on my parents' piano and my friend Brad, you know, Brad Casteller was he comes downstairs and he goes, what the hell is that? And I was like, I don't know, I like it though. And he was like, yeah, that's so cool. And then I started like doing this melody. I just started going like, ba da ba da ba da ba da ba. And he was like, dude, that's, and he was like, that's Sufjan. And I was like, yeah. And then I didn't like let that deter me from going forward. I wasn't like, oh, well, if it sounds like Sufjan, then I don't want to do it.
Right.
I had been listening to a lot of Sufjan at the time. It was like around when Call Me By Your Name came out and I had like been listening to a lot of like his newer stuff and I was like, that's fine. And then every person who hears the song is like, you sound like Sufjan on that song. And I'm like, I really didn't try to do that. It was another one of those things where it just felt like it just kind of flopped out.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not gonna cut it off. I'm not gonna be like, nope, this is too I'm stealing too much here or anything like that. Like it was one of the easiest songs I've ever written, and those are usually my favorite. Again, if they just sort of flop out, come tumbling out, then I don't really. And sure, I might have been a direct result of just, I was listening to a lot of Sufjan at the time. That's totally fine. I'm happy to pay tribute to him in that single, offering. Do you ever sit down though with a specific thing of like something happens to you and you go like, I gotta talk about this. I gotta talk about this thing.
No, honestly.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think I'm very like topical at all.
So that's interesting because when I listen to your lyrics, they're very up to interpretation.
Yeah.
Is that a good way to put that?
Yeah, I think that...
You're not prescribing to me exactly what I need to be thinking of when...
Yeah, no. I mean, I use images.
Yeah.
But I'm never like... what's so interesting. Sometimes I'm like, what am I even doing? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's so funny. But yeah, like I never am like, this is what I want to say, you know?
I find that very fascinating because I always wonder listening to your music, like, does he have a specific thing that he's talking about and he's using very, very like intentionally, just kind of like picturesque poetic language and not really letting me in on the literal interpretation? Or is it more of a free association thing where, like, even you, the songwriter, because I've even written in this way before where it's like, even me, the songwriter, I'm like, I'm not exactly sure what that song's about. It changes for me on a day-to-day basis. Do you feel like it's more like that for you?
Well...
Or does the intent form as you're going?
Yeah, it's like you sit down and I never know what I'm going to say, but then it just starts to show itself to me.
Mm-hmm.
If it didn't show itself, and I've done this where you just write like hollow lyrics, free associated, like whatever.
Uh-huh.
I never want to play that song.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It always has to be tied to something inside, but I don't know what it will be. But then at the end, you know, it becomes very specific to me. But I would never tell a listener what that thing is, because I think it's more powerful if they have their own relationship with it. You mm-hmm. know what I mean?
Yeah. That's what I like about your lyrics, is it really lets me fill in some of the blanks on my own and kind of like, it's more inviting me to connect with the tone that you're setting
mm-hmm.
and the images that you're painting and sort of like go into that world that way rather than telling me a story, which I also like storytelling, and that's a lot of what I do.
Me too.
Is
I
like
love
it's
that.
Very like straightforward. It's like, here's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
I pull a lot from Ben Folds and like country writers who are just like, here's the song, I'm talking about working my 9-to-5.
Right.
And you know, like,
oh, I love that too.
Yeah, love that stuff. But I also love, I mean, if I listen to a Sigur Rós album, I don't know what they're saying,
right?
But I know how I feel
mm-hmm.
when I listen to it,
right.
And that's how I feel more when I listen to a lot of, especially what you're working on right now,
mm-hmm.
is it's much more. I even feel like the stuff that you wrote when you were in your early 20s was maybe a little bit more direct. Do you feel like that? And it's getting more lyrical.
That sounds right. Yeah, for sure, that's right.
Still not super direct or prescriptive, but maybe a little bit more so, and then...
Yeah, maybe. I feel like, I mean, you know, if we took a song, if we took any song, I feel like, to me, they seem specific. But I also can understand how they're not, you know?
I think it's good that it feels specific to you, especially if you're the songwriter.
Right.
I think it's good that you have a specific place that you're coming from with that style.
Mm-hmm.
But that you are understanding that lyrically you're not really necessarily interested in telling a straightforward ABCD narrative.
Mm-hmm.
It's there. You know specifically what's going on. But
for me, it's like, I think it's, and I'm not saying I succeed in this, but like there's an in-between space between the like the total abstracted and the real world, or like, you know, material world, whatever. And there's this place right in between it that is like a sweet spot that I like to touch on. And every once in a while, I feel like I'll like get there a little bit. Because there, I don't want to get pulled down too far to earth where I'm like, this is recalling too much mundane to my mind. Like, I don't want to think about that. I want to be lifted up out of it a little bit. You know what I mean? And then, but I also don't, but I also need something to hold on to, you know?
Makes me feel like, think of dance. Like, dance is very much that way where, like, the choreographer's intent is very specific,
mm-hmm.
but the idea is to transcend
the
spoken word.
Totally.
To pull you up rather than have it be mundane.
Right.
Yeah.
And certain people, when they're really gifted with a more topical style, like, they totally succeed in elevating me out of it anyway. But mm-hmm. I think a part of it for me is, like, trying to escape my own day-to-day a little bit too, you know?
Yeah. So, okay, tell me about moving to L.A. and sort of just what's been going on, like, the last couple of years, because I feel like, as an outsider watching you, it feels like you've been on a trajectory where things have been moving a little bit, more so than they maybe were before. Or do you feel that? It feels like there's been some mobility, or like some like getting you've been very active in the scene here, you know? And like, from the outsider perspective, I'm like, God, Sam's playing all the time and working with a label, and like, how have things like progressed and changed for you in the last couple of years?
When I moved here, like, my whole goal was like, and you know, I'd go back on this now, but I used to like whisper when I sang, basically.
Uh-huh.
Like, the joke with the bands I'd play with was like that you could never hear me mm-hmm. at all. And I felt like it was a really big, I don't know. It was like a crippled part of myself. I felt like, you know, like, I was so scared to use my voice because I didn't know how to use it in order, I don't know. So I moved here thinking I need to find out what my voice is, you know? And I even started playing with the band for a second when I got here, and I was like, no, I'm just doing what I was doing before. Like, I'm not interested in that anymore. I can't just keep recreating the past. And so I got like a mic and I started singing into it, and I feel like I just was so scared to use my voice. It was crazy. And then finally I started to get more comfortable with it. And the people that I would listen to that I liked the way that they sang, I felt like I can get there if I want to. It was like torturing me, you know, because I was like, I know I can get there, but I can't get there. Like, it was just like insane, you know. Anyway, so finally I felt like I was starting to hear myself sing. Like, I started to feel like I was hearing my voice, you know. Not that I wouldn't change my voice, but I felt like I had one to start with, even. And I felt like I was starting to play with like kind of a style, but then I couldn't finish a song, you know? And so I was like, well, fuck, I think I have it. And it was so exciting. It was like, oh my God, I've got something and I can't do anything with it. You know, it was just like, it felt crazy, you know? And then I did that 30-day song challenge mm-hmm. thing, and then I just started pumping them out.
That's almost like back to basics, like getting back to like, hey, let's just not judge it and just kind of...
Yes.
Boom, boom, and maybe I'll hit some, you know, find some gold.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what's crazy is like, it was the same thing literally pretty much every time. Literally pretty much. Anyway. Mm-hmm. Where you have the song and you're getting it out, and then you're like 70% of the way through, and then you think, oh, this is shit, move on to something else, you know? I did that every time at 70%, but there was no choice because I had to finish it. So I moved past that, and then I finished it. And that was the biggest teacher to me that I've ever had, because it was like, just finish it. Then you can fix it. You can never fix it if it's not done.
Yeah.
You know? And then you can move on and do something else. And then you have something there, you know? And like, a lot of them weren't good, you know? But some of them were worth keeping, and so...
Just finish it and move on.
Yeah.
Seriously, that's why I say back to basics, because it reminds me of that time of like being in my early 20s, living in that house, smoking weed every day, and just like writing song after song, and knowing most of them weren't really materializing the way I wanted them to, but like just kind of being willing to just turn the page and move on to the next one.
Yeah.
And just kind of like pump them out and just... Getting back into that. So you find this new voice mm-hmm. and then you have to reconnect with the relationship that we were talking about earlier and kind of go, okay, I need to shake off and like, and in this new voice, in this new vein, just write a shit ton of songs, which I think makes sense. Like, if you're going to be trying something new, to like do a bunch and just kind of like figure out the style. When Chris and I were first starting to do electronic music, I remember I just started getting so excited about like every single day I would make new beats. Mm-hmm. And I would just be at home because I just was like, this is so much fun. And it kind of opened up songwriting for me again in a whole new fresh way. I'd kind of gotten really bored and I'd kind of gotten really like, I don't know, I just feel like I keep saying the same thing. And then when we decided to do that, I was like, oh, this is so much fun. I can, you know, and I was back like a kid in a sandbox again, and I was playing and I didn't really care if they were good or not. Mm-hmm. I just was having so much fun making them.
Yeah.
And I don't know, it sounds like you did a little bit of that, like getting back to basics, just going, cool, I'm so excited I have this new thing to play with.
Yeah.
Let's see what I can find.
Yeah, it totally. I mean, it was like, and it gives you strength too, because there's like, I mean, it's a double-edged thing where like, it's like torturing you because you don't know if you're ever really going to be able to get it out.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, but I have to, you know, but you don't know if you're going to be capable of it. You don't know if your skill's going to be up to par or your bravery or whatever. And then, but then the good part about it is like, when I would feel, because you know, you come to a new city, you've got so many different projections on the people around you, and especially here where you see really successful people sometimes, and you're maybe like brush elbows with them, and then you're talking to them, and maybe you feel like rejected or whatever. Like, where you move to a new city and you're just trying to make friends, and like people don't have time for it because they're in a different place, and you feel rejected and you feel angry sometimes. And every single time that happened, I was like, I've got this thing I can go back to. Like, my job isn't to become friends with this person. That's not why I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here to develop this, and I've got to develop it, you know? And so it was just more motivation to go back and try to develop.
So how'd you get started out here? Were you doing open mics? Were you doing like, or were you just like, did you have friends that you were hitting up going, hey, can you put me on a show? Can you fit me on a bill? How do you get that ball rolling of?
For me, it was like, I worked at a coffee shop and I talked to people, and I think that, you know, it's good to not hustle. It's good to, like, if you're in a new place, to approach it with some humility and just try to get to know everyone around you first.
Yeah.
And count, like, you know, just have faith. Like, you're going to see them again, you know, like, just treat them like a person. You're going to see them again, like, build a relationship.
Yeah, don't treat everyone like an instant networking business opportunity.
Yeah, it's just they can feel it. You can feel it too.
We should collaborate.
Yeah.
Well, chill. Yeah. Maybe let's just hang out.
Right.
And yeah.
And so yeah, open your heart up and then work diligently at what you're doing, and then I think it will just start to connect. You know, for me it was like I did the song challenge thing. The reason I wasn't promoting myself at all when I first got here wasn't necessarily like humility. It was just like I didn't have material I wanted to play.
Yeah.
And so when I wrote that, when I wrote the songs, I posted them, and I got some responses, and I got asked to do some shows, and it was a combination of them hearing it on the internet and then like seeing them at the coffee shop or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, it was just like, it's putting yourself out there, and I don't know. I think when you're in a flow too, people respond to that, and when you're not, you get nothing. Because, I mean, like, after that, I went through a really heavy depression.
Uh-huh.
Like, it really sucked, and then I wasn't getting any kind of response at all, you know? And so, yeah, it's just, like I said, sometimes it's synchronicity, and sometimes it's just...
Living in a new town can be really, really hard and really isolating.
Yeah.
And
you're aging.
Yeah.
You know, and you're like, you just feel like your mortality more, and you're like, I'm gonna die, and I'm not gonna ever have as much time as I used to have, and it's, I don't know, your dreams change, everything changes, just it's weird.
Yeah.
it's hard. It's hard to be alive.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. It's also really cool.
It's also really cool.
It's also really awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah. Music's one of those things where I'm like, that's so dope that we do that.
Right.
That's so cool that we, and like all forms of art. That's why I just love being an artist, is like, it's like my favorite thing that people do.
Yeah.
It's like so cool.
Oh, yeah.
How does the label come into fruition? Is that just part of that finding a synchronicity and finding a vibe and being right people, right place, or is that something you seek out?
I did seek it out. I sent it out to labels when I finished it,
mm-hmm.
And then one of them got back to me, and it's crazy. Like I went to go see Cass McCombs when I was living in Utah still, and there was this guy, Matt. He opened for him, and I talked to him after the show in Utah, and he lives here, and so when I moved to LA, I went to one of his shows, and we just kind of became friends after that. And the girl that opened for him, Casey, I also became friends with her, and she was a big part of the record that I just made, and Matt was the one who sent it to that label that ended up wanting to put it out.
So you made the record first, and uh-huh. then shopped it.
Yeah.
That's cool. That's what I've heard, that that's a process that a lot of people do initially, is like make something that they feel good about and then shop it before they release it,
mm-hmm.
and try to get some interest. That's cool. That's good that you got that response. I'm really...
Yeah. I mean, it's like they put the record out for you. I mean, I was thinking about it, like I probably could have had just as... would have had the exact same response, I think, if I just would have put it out on my own.
Mm-hmm.
But...
what do you think that this... is there anything... I've heard that sometimes being involved with a label, like, they have, like, certain guidelines where they're like, we need X amount of songs from you in this quarter, or we need... do you have anything like that? Do you have terms of, like, what you're required to now do?
No,
or?
Because I asked... I asked for a one-and-done contract where I was like, I don't want to do another record. I just want to do this one. And so they said yes to that, so...
why'd you do that?
Because I didn't want to get tied to the label.
Okay.
Because, I don't know, like, maybe I won't like working... maybe I won't enjoy that experience. I mean, I was just really nervous about it because I'd never done anything like that. So I was like, what if they, like, fuck me over and it sucks? Or what if I want to sign to a different label and try something else? Or what if I just want to self-release next time, you know? So I didn't want anything binding. And so I was just like, it's either one and done or I can't do it.
Cool.
And he was cool about it.
Cool.
So it's great.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, they don't put... this label doesn't put, like, money into, like, PR or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just does it all himself. And...
how do you feel about that? How do you feel about, like, PR, like, promoting yourself and that whole aspect of being an artist in the internet age? I mean, how do you feel about having to, like, be your own biggest cheerleader and stuff? Is that something that's comfortable for you, or is that something that's...
no.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it's comfortable for anybody.
I hope that people understand that, that, like, we don't enjoy shoving our shit down your throat every... you know, few weeks or few days in my case. Like I don't, like, I don't want to constantly just be like advertise, but
no,
like,
no,
it's, if you're getting serious about it and if you want to like be able to have any kind of livelihood doing it, or if you want to have any kind of reach or anything like that, like you need to, like, you need to be the person who is on the front lines of,
mm-hmm.
you know,
I think people understand that too if they're yeah. in this field, like,
yeah,
I mean, when I was living in a smaller town, I felt like people were like really judging it more harshly or something, like it wasn't like punk or something like that.
Yeah, it's like not cool to like give a shit.
Yeah, but then you move somewhere bigger and you're like, oh, we just have to do this. I don't judge them for doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, sometimes you're in a bad mood and like you're scrolling and you're like, oh, this person again, you know?
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure that they feel that way about me, and it's just like, who cares, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's something that gives me a little bit of hope, is I rarely feel like, oh my God, when one of my friends says, hey, I did this thing,
mm-hmm.
I rarely am like annoyed. Like,
no.
But also I get it. I yeah. just am like, yeah, I know, you gotta,
yeah.
you gotta shill out the thing, like you gotta like, you gotta, and oftentimes I'll go take a look at it. Oftentimes
yeah.
I'll go, if it's something I can easily go and support, I'll go and take a look at it.
Same.
And if I really like it, I'll let them know. But that's also part of my process of like, that's part of it too, is
yeah.
like, you gotta try to also be a fan of other people's stuff and make sure that you're, you know, part of the ships in the yard that are getting lifted by a rising tide, you know, like
yeah.
you want to be a team player rather than just solo dolo doing your own thing, you know?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, it is. It's like I said with the releasing thing, like I get sick to my stomach sometimes. Like, and sometimes like when I'd like even just promoting something or even just saying like, hey, this is coming out soon, or like even now with this podcast, like a lot of what I'm posting is focused on the podcast, and like I hope there's not fatigue around that, because also it's like you need to try to cast a net that's wider than your immediate circle of friends and family, because yeah, they will get fatigued on it, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But you need to still have that stuff out there with the appropriate hashtags or whatever, mm-hmm, so that you can have a chance of breaking through on that algorithm, you know, like you just did with this new single, and like getting on a playlist or getting it, you know, you want to hopefully get noticed by someone who's not in your immediate circle, who's able to hear the thing a little bit more objectively, mm-hmm, or a little bit more removed from it, and who can go, this is cool, I want to pump this up.
Yeah.
You know?
For sure.
And that can't happen if you're not on the front lines of shouting your own name.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, and also, like, it's not you, you know? It's like, I think it's important to remember that, you know, that isn't you. It's just this avatar, kind of.
Yeah.
It's like these selected photos and some words for like a very specific type of communication, and it's not actually you. And
if it's not the same thing as actually having a relationship with me.
Yeah, and if you identify with it, I think it can be like destructive. So you have to have like a healthy distance and objectivity with it.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Because even this show is like it's something I always wanted to do, and it's something I've wanted to do for a while, and I'm happy doing it, and like I'm happy that people are listening and coming back and stuff like that. But it's also like there's a life outside of this, and there's like relationships that I have that have nothing to do with this,
yeah,
and that have like, you know, and I try to make the show full of my friends so that the conversations flow easily and stuff like that, and that I enjoy doing it too. Mm-hmm. And it is, I think there's a, just like songwriting, it's like it's a snippet, it's a look at colors of me, mm-hmm, and things that I feel and think, but it's, yeah, it's not, that's really smart to feel like you can't hyper identify with that and also get codependent on the success or lack of success of that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
because sometimes you assume that people have the same projections on yourself that you do, when they are really given the most tiny amount of information to make up a decision about you if they don't know you, you know,
mm-hmm,
and they've never heard your voice, they've never seen the way you move, or like, you know, whatever, like. And sometimes they'll like insult you, and sometimes they say that they like you a lot or whatever. And
I feel like if you get to the point with a video or a song or a something like that where people you don't know are insulting it in the, mm-hmm, comments section, that, mm-hmm, means that you're on a good trajectory.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, like what? Yeah, yeah, that means that it's getting outside of your circle.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I remember the first time I posted, like, I had something where someone was like, "This is awful." I was like, "Well, that means that like it's getting
yeah,
a reach beyond my net of people who would never." Like my friends and family would never say.
No, I actually, you know? I had the same, yeah, thought. Like, uh-huh. I had a troll the other day, and I was like, whoa, this means I'm like, they think I'm not human enough. Like, I'm that out there.
I'm not real to them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They could just.
I'm just an idea.
Yeah.
Like, the guy who made this song is, I'll never meet this person. I don't even think of this person as a person. It's just a song.
Right.
And fuck this song.
Right. And I can't take that personally because, yeah, it's not me that he's really talking to.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Uh-huh. Absolutely. So. It's just like, I didn't take it personally at all, really. I just was like, oh, cool. I was like, that's so funny that this guy like was just like, this is terrible. I was like, oh, cool. Like, I've never had someone say that about something that I posted, which means that it's reaching that extra, extra wide audience, you know?
Yeah.
What's next on the horizon for you? You got another release coming in April. You have, right now people can go listen to I can go with you on streaming services. You got another one coming out in April. Is it another single or is the EP just dropping? Another single. Yeah. Can you say the title of the single?
Oh, yeah. It's called Nothing Touches Me.
Nothing Touches Me. It might be out by the time this posts. I bet we'll post this sometime in March. So Nothing Touches Me in like a week and a half. In the meantime, go listen to the other single. I have one other thing I want to ask you, and we can like push pause before this if you want. We can like stop and chill. Would you play a song? You can say no, but I mean, it would be like a really lame move that I would have to edit off the file.
I could attempt it.
We can push pause and like get some water and take a little break and then come back and and do a song, tune the guitar.
Let's try it. I may, if the performance is terrible.
I'll cut it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm very sleepy today. I didn't get enough sleep last night.
See, this is the thing I was going to talk to you about live performing is like I've been watching you perform so much over the last couple of years and I've been like, man, because now we performed together through the years many, many, many times, but like more than any of my friends, you're the person who like I've never seen a person stop in the middle of a set more and go, I don't think I'm going to do this. And get up and go, I'm not feeling it. Or and everyone goes, come on, finish, Sam. And you go, I don't know. Or you'll go like, yeah, I'm not going to play that song. You'll be like 20, 30 seconds into the song and just, yeah, I'm going to do another song.
Yeah.
But it feels like this year of playing lots of shows, or these last couple of years of playing lots of shows has like opened up like maybe a higher level of comfortability.
Yeah, I'm just like, I can't do that anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
So let's take a break.
Yeah.
And then bring the heat.
All right.
You can play the new single or the one that's coming out in April if you want.
I'll play it.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Here we go. All right. Whenever you're ready.
Okay. I can go with you, but only so far. You glide on the water, and I fall on the shore. It's all up to fate. I was a little younger and I learned too late. I can go with you even after you go. So many ways to follow, but only one road. Just a little thought, and it's all scattered so. Across the river, are you waiting for me? Well, if I was a little bigger, I'd go and see.
roll across my time. It's nothing really to mourn, but I can reach the angel and I cannot hear their horns. No, I cannot reach the angel and I cannot hear their horns.
Right on, man. Thanks for coming over.
Thank you.
Yep. So what'd you think, huh? I mean, did I oversell the song or what? I mean, that's a hell of a song right there, right? That's a hell of a tune. You can go listen to that right now on Apple Music or Spotify. I Can Go With You by Sam Burton. You look up Sam Burton, it's right there. Sam's got lots of stuff on Bandcamp as well from back in the days, and I highly recommend that stuff. Seriously, Google Sam Burton Herd Behavior. It'll come up under the Thonic label, that Thonic label that I've talked about on the last few episodes. Google that and listen to that EP. He'd hate that I'm saying this right now. He'd be like, don't tell people to listen to that because he's moved on and he's progressed and he's doing new things now. But I'm telling you, it's incredible. And I think he put that out when he was like 21 or 22. So like, it's insane how good that EP is. But yeah, go listen to the single. His new single should be out any day now. He said in the interview that it comes out in April, and it's April, so it should come out this weekend or next weekend. Keep an eye out, keep an ear out for that. You can follow Sam on social media to get a better idea of when his stuff's gonna drop, because you're gonna wanna get that new single and you're gonna wanna hear the album too, I imagine. Just lots of good music coming from that guy, and it just keeps getting better and better and better. So yeah, you're gonna want to watch him. I feel like he's about to have some cool stuff happen, and I'm happy for him, and I'm proud of him, and I'm excited for him. Yeah. You know, People Pleaser is written, edited, produced, and hosted by me, Austin Archer, with original theme music, also by me. Theme music this week, since we were talking about songwriting, I don't know if you noticed, at the very top of the show, that was the instrumental track to the Boss TV song, Before I Let You Go. That's a single you can go listen to, a music video you can go check out. And then right after that was an instrumental version of an unreleased track from my upcoming album. Okay, I've learned a thing or two. Me and Mary have been watching a lot of RuPaul's Drag Race while we've been in this quarantine, and I've learned a thing or two from Ru. Ru always uses whatever the newest single she's releasing that season as like the background music for the almost the entire season, almost to the point where you're like sick of it. And you know why she does that? A, it makes for really cheap rights. Like, VH1 doesn't need to pay music rights to someone to use their music. And B, because she's hustling, okay? She's slinging that song, just like Sam and I talked about in the interview. Yeah, and I gotta sling my stuff, all right? That's part of this show, is me slinging my stuff on you, all right? So go listen to Before I Let You Go. It's an old single, but it's cool if you haven't heard it. And you can go watch the music video, and then, you know, keep an eye out for my new singles as they're coming out, and for the album, all right? Okay? That all right? That album, by the way, is mixed and mastered by Chris Bjorn over at Marmalade Music, and you can use Chris Bjorn and Marmalade Music for your project, and you should right now, especially more than ever. Independent contractors and freelance workers like Chris need your business, especially if you're bored and you're thinking, what should I do? Record a little song at home, send it over to Chris, he'll mix and master it for you. Tell him that you listen to People Pleaser, and he'll give you 20% off, okay? MarmaladeMusicSLC.com, tell him that you listen to People Pleaser for 20% off. Ah, oh, geez. I think that's everything. You know, normally I say that you can find more of my music by going to my website, austin-archer.com, or like looking up Austin Archer on Spotify or Apple Music, but I don't think I need to say that this week because I think I've already plugged my music enough, but like, I guess I just said it, so you can do those things. And I think, really, for real,
for realsies, I think I'm done right now. Okay, that's it for this week. And who knows what's coming up next, because I got nothing in the can. So want to hear from you. If you got any problems with anything we said this week or anything I've said in the past few weeks, let me know. DM me on Instagram for that. If you have an issue with the show or you want to contribute to the conversation or you have an idea for where I should go next, DM me on Instagram at PeoplePleaserPodcast. That's where I will respond to those. And yeah, just love you so much. Okay, thanks. Bye.